Ritzy.
Hey, hey, Carmine, how are you?
Great, how are you doing?
We are in a very pink office
we
today.
We really are. This is amazing.
I love it.
It's a little different.
And there's my shoes. So we are here with Roz Ho, and she is the vice president of...
Oh, the Premium Mobile Experiences, and that's part of the Mobile Communications Business Unit.
Wow, very exciting. So you are a longtime Microsoft veteran, eh?
Yes, 17 years.
17 years. This is your 15-year trophy or plaque.
Yeah, oh, that was so 2 years ago. That was like a lifetime ago.
So maybe at 20 you'll get a special sit-down dinner with Bill and Steve or something?
And yeah, well, at least Steve.
Yeah.
Wow, 17 years.
That's insane.
What? Why do you still come to work every day?
Well, you know what? Can I just show you?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's see it.
Come with me.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Top secret corridors.
Yes, don't point the camera or anything.
Okay.
Keep it on me. Oh, now I'm going to have to kill you guys. So this is what I wanted you guys to see.
Okay.
About the people.
So
let's go back.
Excellent.
The team, and I'll tell you what they're doing.
I thought you were going to show us a top secret prototype.
Oh, no, no, we can't do that.
Bummer.
In fact, I just went through my standards of business conduct training, and I think that's one of the things they tell you not to do. Right?
Sure. Actually, there's a way to get around having to take that, but I won't share that on camera.
So, right. What was just happening is my Redmond team, which is roughly about half the team that I'm managing right now, my Redmond team and my Palo Alto team just got to one of their sprint exits, and everybody's doing demos. So there's a lot of enthusiasm about the project, the product that they're building, and that's why I still work here. It's really all about the people.
Right.
And the products. I love products.
Okay.
I love my team.
But the people they're smart, they're dedicated, they're passionate.
Yeah. Very much so. You know, I'll just kind of tell you a story. Like, 17 years ago, I used to work at Hewlett-Packard.
Yep.
Actually, I was a developer there. Worked there for about roughly 5 years, something like that. You know, the product I work on, I would say it was, you know, good technology, but it was pretty much a commercial, let's just call it, didn't really make any impact in the marketplace. And I decided then that I was a software engineer, and I needed to go work for a software company. Not a hardware company.
All right.
And I kind of looked around. You know, I'm like, once I decide on something, I go do it. So I, like, bunch of interviews. I got, like, all these offers. And my friends at Microsoft said, you got to come talk to us at Microsoft. And I said, I'll never work for Microsoft.
Why
so
not?
I lived in the Valley. I still do live in the Valley. I live in the Bay Area. Mm. And, you know, they were kind of... You know, had this reputation, shall we say. And I said, I would never work for Microsoft. And they said, don't, just come talk to us, just come talk to us. And I did. I went for a day of interview with a bunch of people, and I thought, wow, this is just an amazing group of people. Smart, energetic, driven, wanted to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I accepted the offer and came to work at Microsoft. It's probably the best career decision I've ever made.
And 17 years later, you feel the same way.
Oh, I still do. I wouldn't be here today if I wasn't having fun every day. Well, maybe not every day. Generally. You know, I'm having fun, and I feel like I'm making an impact. You know, I feel like, you know, I really have played some part, some small part of us changing the world together.
Wow.
So
it's cool. That's inspirational.
Indeed.
So let's talk specifically about the division that you are in charge of. You said premium mobile. Why premium? Why is that word in there to qualify it?
So there's actually a couple of layers to this. So
okay.
About 21 months ago, I used to be the general manager of the Macintosh business unit.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of go back in history a little bit. So I did that for about 4 years,
mm-hmm.
Running, you know, Mac office.
Very profitable, right?
Yeah, very profitable. I worked with Steve Jobs, great experience, you know, was very, I learned a lot. It was great. And, you know, I started thinking about, well, what else do I want to do? And what I've always wanted to do was to work on consumer products. Mm-hmm. You know, Office is a consumer product. Mm-hmm. Actually, nowadays we think of it as, you know, productivity for business users. Mm-hmm. But when we started many, many years ago working in Office, it was really always mm-hmm. about the end user. And so I wanted to work on consumer products, and really I wanted to work on like a V1. You know, I wanted to do a new, as I think everybody at Microsoft does, right? They mm-hmm. want to do a kind of start a new project. And at the same time, you know, the company has been focused for many, many years. We've actually worked in mobile for a long time, 8 years, 10 years, something like that. We've been building the OS for the OS for mobile for a really long time. But we had spent a lot of energy working on doing features for the business power user. And so we were thinking, hey, you know what? We really need to figure out what consumers want out of the mobile mm-hmm. software. Mm-hmm. And so that's the assignment that I took on from Robbie Bob, mm-hmm. which is to go figure out, you know, what Good. We want to build. And so, you know, I pulled a very small team together. There were 12 of us. Mm-hmm. I can tell this part of the story. There were 12 of us. And we kind of went away. There were business people, there were technologists, and there were designers, actually, mm-hmm. experienced people. And we kind of did it all together. You know, we used to have kind of an open space area. We had this big table we all sat around, and it was really fun. We did that for about 7 months. We did, you know, a lot of work on studying the market, doing a lot of research, building a business plan, business model, very, very, like, deep kind of dive into the mobile industry. To think about what we wanted to build and how we were going to take it to market. And lo and behold, we actually got funded, and we went out and bought a company. Mm-hmm. We bought Danger, which mm-hmm. is the company that does the Sidekick product mm-hmm. for T-Mobile. So 300 people from my team came from that acquisition.
Wow.
And then I hired a lot more people. I have roughly 500 people on my team right now, and we're working on a really super exciting project. Which I really can't share more information than that, and I'm sorry.
But when you are ready to talk about it, we'll come back. Chill and I will be here.
Absolutely.
Yes, you will hear all about it. I love to tell that story. In fact, I keep a journal of all the things that have happened on the project. And I actually really want to write a book about it someday.
Excellent.
What it's like to kind of be inside Microsoft and be a woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, do this. And do, like, basically get funded in a really big way, build a big team, become a corp VP, which is a big surprise to me, and never one of my life's ambitions, and, you know, hopefully built a really super great product and have a really successful launch.
That would be marvelous.
That'd be great. Yeah. So I want to talk about being a woman at Microsoft, but first I want to talk a little bit about your background. So it sounds like you were a developer?
Yes, actually, so... I was born in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. so I, you know, came to the States with my family when I was 11 years old. So very kind of a, you know, part of the dominant culture, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden I was a minority. I didn't know I was a minority until I came to the United States. How does that work, huh? Anyway, you know, different language, different culture. Mm-hmm. And I always knew, I was like 15 or something when I took my first, I was always really good in math, mm-hmm. like great in math. Even in Hong Kong, I was really good in math.
Mm.
So, you know, I was really good in math.
Were they all good in math, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was really good in math. And came to the United States, always good in math, and when I was about 15, I took my first programming class, and I was completely hooked. I thought, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. Plus, I read a lot of sci-fi books, so I blame it all on, you know, Isaac Asimov and, you know, all of those great, like, old-time kind of sci-fi writers of those days. So I read lots of them. I read, like, every sci-fi book published at the time. So... I always knew I wanted to go into computers.
Wow. Like,
it was not, there was this brief moment when I wanted to be an astronaut.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I don't know, you know, that didn't happen for lots of reasons, but didn't happen, so I settled on, okay, computers, that's what I want to do. So I actually got a degree in computer science. Mm. I worked actually at Bank of America for a little while. It's a little bit of a... I actually dropped out of school. I was working for Bank of America part-time, running their securities transaction, night division, processing their securities transactions through the day. And they offered me a full-time job. I don't know how many people know this story. And basically, what I was making would be probably about twice what I would made had I actually graduated. So I said, okay, that's an easy one. I dropped out of school, and I actually worked in the trading room for Bank of America for a while. And I was, I think, like 20 years old. Wow. I was the youngest officer at Bank of America at the time. So I worked with a bunch of, there's like 400 guys in the training room and like 7 women. And it was so tough for me. It was such a tough environment. These guys would leave. I hope we don't have to edit this part out. Like, their Playboy centerfold magazines all over their desk. It was just an awful environment for a 20-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just awful.
You won't have to edit that out.
Yeah, I mean, it was awful. It was awful. Jeez. So I didn't have, like, it wasn't like I wasn't up to the challenge, but it wasn't a great time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was, and at the same time, that was when the banks were really like building computer systems for everything, right? Automating everything, building their big back-end transaction systems. And I was in the bathroom talking to another woman who was actually in their systems engineering department. She was actually a project manager. And I told her how I wasn't having a great time in the trading room, and she knew that I was studying computer science. She says, you know what? Come work for me. Because, you know, what you don't already know about writing code, I can teach you. And I don't actually have anybody on my team that knows anything about securities trading. So it was perfect. So I went to work for her. And then at some point I decided, oh, I should actually go back and finish my degree. So I did, while I was still working. And so that was great, and then I went to work for Hewlett Packard for 5 years as a developer. I actually came to Microsoft, you know, I already described all that, as a program manager. Mm-hmm. So I was a program manager for, I don't know, several years, like 5-7 years. Shipped a lot of versions of PowerPoint in Office.
In Low Park?
Yeah, in Menlo Park, and actually moved to Cupertino. You know, the whole office moved to Cupertino and then to Mountain View. I ran the product planning group for a while for OfficeArt and PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. And then I became a product unit manager for the Macintosh business unit. Actually, I took my sabbatical in 1999 after 7 years. Mm-hmm. And kind of had the, I was gone for about 3.5 months. I traveled. I wasn't home. And I did a lot of thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I want to do when I grow up? Mm-hmm. As many people who have worked at Microsoft for a long time do. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I thought, maybe I'd go be an archaeologist, which is another one of my hobbies. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I'll do something different. And actually, after 3.5 months away, I decided I was in the exact right place. I was exactly where I wanted to be. I wanted to continue to do software. In fact, I thought, you know, I want to do more.
Wow.
So I actually came back for a little while, and then I quit my job. I actually quit.
Wow. Mm.
But I had him walk out the door. So like, here's a lesson. If you're going to quit, don't give them 2 months. Because in the 2 months, they will think of something else for you to do that you will find hard to turn down.
Irresistible.
Right. So that's what happened to me. So I joined the Macintosh business unit. Mm-hmm. As a product unit manager, running a, you know, dev PM test team of about 50 or 60 people. And then I became the general manager a couple of years after that. Mm-hmm. And I did that for about 4 years. And it was really great because I had a technical background. I did do product planning for a while, so that exposed me to the broader business context, which actually gave me some of the skills and experience to be the general manager of the Macintosh business unit, which is one of the few GM jobs in the company that actually has you running the entire P&L. So you really get to know how to run a business, how to do marketing,
right,
and you know how to do a lot of the things that that a lot of people with a technical background doesn't really get exposed to, or doesn't until they get very high up in the organization.
Right.
So it was great training for me. I worked for Lisa Brummel.
Yep.
And Lisa was a great manager. Lisa is so good. For those of you who don't know Lisa's background, she has never been in HR until she got senior VP of HR job. And Lisa is an amazing business person. If you don't know this, you know, I just, like, watch her and learn and just, like, in awe. Lisa, oh, my God, you're so good. You know?
Right on.
Lisa. So I learned from her. And then, you know, then I got to know, because MacBoo is kind of an interesting division in that it has kind of a unique place at Microsoft, because you're doing, you know, work on the Macintosh when everybody else is so Windows-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're dealing with Apple all the time, who is... You know, in many ways, a competitor.
Yep.
They're also, you know, a partner sometimes, a business partner.
Co-opetition.
So really kind of an interesting relationship. Plus the fact that, you know, anytime I really pissed off Steve Jobs, I'm sure he would just call Bill or Steve and they would return his phone call. So, you know, there was a lot of a really interesting and challenging assignment in many ways. It was but it was a good setup. And it was also, you know, a team of great people.
Mm.
And, you know, when I started this, I said, the reason I'm here is because it's a team of really great people. It's all about that. You wake up every day, you come to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the people around you.
Wow.
And this company, you know, has not let me down. I mean, 17 years later, I still love the people I work with. You know, people I report to, people around me, you know, people that work for me.
So talk about specifically being a woman at Microsoft. You actually mentioned Lisa Brummel, so you have a mentor. I mean, there are people that you could find that were like you.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's exactly, actually, I think there's, Julie and I are probably the most alike in the corporate VP space.
Julie Larson Green.
Yeah, Julie Larson Green.
So you can say if I admit by one name, we know who it is.
Yeah, it's Julie.
Yeah.
How many core VPs have you women?
Yeah, seriously.
Julie.
Not
cool.
That many.
All right.
Yeah, so I think she's been around for like almost 15 years or something. She worked in office, technical background. She came to Microsoft. She has a background as a developer prior to joining Microsoft. She became a PM when she got here. So very similar. I think the big difference between us is, you know, I kind of detour and was a product planner for a while, and then I started running kind of more of an end-to-end business, and she's running this big, you know, complicated Windows organization. So she stayed probably more on the technical side, whereas I've kind of branched out and become more generalized. I mean, there's Julie. But, you know, I started to say, actually, when I talked about my background, that I'm actually very used to being different.
Mm-hmm.
So I was an immigrant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, different girl in, you know, math class, always really great at math.
Right.
Well, not great, but good. Getting good grades, I should say, which is different from being great. Getting good grades in math. And then, you know, studying computer science, where you are mostly just, you know, one of maybe 20% at best.
Right.
And then working in a series of technology companies where it's pretty much just all, you know, men.
So it's second nature to you.
It is second nature to me. Every now and then I look around and I do wish there were more women in this space. I think there are some differences in communication styles.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's so much gender. I would say, you know, and Lisa and I used to talk about this a little bit, which is it's really not about gender.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more about habits and a lot about communication styles and a lot about work style.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I think about diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Talk more about diversity and what that means and how so it's so important that we reflect our customer base with a diverse workforce.
Well, I tell a couple of stories, and this is what I say. I actually speak at some women's conferences, and I try to speak a lot to kind of middle school and high school girls, because I think we kind of lose them there.
Yes.
And what I say is, you know, technology plays a huge part in creating the new world. Like, we're changing the world. We're adding technology. So we've got this choice, you know, as women, we have this choice. We can either let the boys do it, and they can create a world that pretty much mirrors what they want, or we can participate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important that, A, you're right, we need to reflect our customer base. So our products probably sell 50% to women. So we need to reflect that. Mm-hmm. And cultural as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I'll just add that I think we're very U.S.-centric, right? So
very.
You know, and over 50% of our revenue comes from overseas. So
mm-hmm.
we need to really be broader in the way we think about our customers. So for one, and for two, you just, you know, you're ignoring, if you don't have women in your workforce, you're ignoring exactly half of the world's talent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not right. You know, I mean, it's very short-sighted. You
mm-hmm.
need to have in your workforce the very best talent you can find. And if you don't have enough women there, you're not going to hire other women. Because
mm-hmm.
there is a little bit of a, you know, I look around the company,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, it's somewhat discouraging to me
mm-hmm.
every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when I look at the people coming into work for us, the
mm-hmm.
college hires.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the pipeline isn't there. I know that, you know, that it's actually trending the wrong way.
Right.
Yep,
there are
right.
less female computer science graduates
yes.
as there used to be. So it's trending the wrong way. The pipeline is shrinking. And then when I look at who's coming in to work for us, I get very discouraged sometimes.
So what can we do?
Well, you know, I think we need to make it, we need to have more Women's Day. I think one of the things that we've definitely found is there's a drop-off when women get to a certain level. Like they decide to go have family, or they, and you know, there's probably a whole other societal trend about whether why women are still the ones that drop off the career track,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have a little bit of that, or they don't actually leave, but they select, you know, they want to have better work-life balance.
Right, step off the fast track.
Yeah, they step off the fast track, and I think we should reflect reality. I think as a company, we should make sure that people can do that and come right back,
yeah.
right? So you don't, what I find is if you actually leave the workforce for 5 years, this is just from other women I've talked to, if you actually leave the workforce for 5 years and you come back, you're almost starting all over
yes.
again. And, you know, without people taking into your account your past experience. And I think that's wrong. We should do better at that. And I think we should do a lot better at part-time
mm-hmm.
and a lot better at job sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think people with the kind of experience that we need, women with that kind of experience, they can be, you know, actually even more valuable as a part-time
right.
worker than someone who doesn't have the experience.
The studies say
full-time.
That they're more productive because they're more focused when they're here.
Yeah.
Less water
so,
cooler talk kind of thing.
Yeah, so I think we need to kind of be better at you know, telecommuting,
mm-hmm.
allowing people to stay at home so they don't add this whole commute time on top of everything else. So we need to be better at helping people do work-life balance, better at the job sharing, better at part-time,
mm-hmm.
better at all of the things that make it easier for people to stay in the workforce
mm-hmm.
and be productive. So I think that would really
mm-hmm.
help. And I think, you know, as women, we all need to really reach out to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
To do that in middle school
mm-hmm.
and in high school. Frankly, I think we need a big marketing campaign.
Yeah.
You know, we have an image problem.
Mm-hmm.
Being a geek is not really
it's
that
a stigma.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
No, it's not that cool. And you know what I heard a lot of girls say is they don't really get how it impacts the world. Like they don't really get why it's relevant. Whereas being, you know, perhaps a biology scientist,
mm-hmm.
you know, a biological scientist, they kind of get that. Like, they get medical research. They get
right.
being a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And they get being a sociologist. But they don't really get how being a computer scientist
mm-hmm.
really does anything but build, you know, violent games for the Xbox
mm-hmm.
or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not really relating, and there's a whole image problem. So I actually think, you know, hey, we have a new president coming in. Maybe we should go work on him. Maybe we should. We should go and say, hey, you know what? We just need to really pay attention to this. If we're going to be, if America is going to be the leading technology factor in the world, I think we need to work on this problem.
Right.
I do. I mean, I think technology companies are one of the reasons why we've become such a dominant economic force mm-hmm. in the world. And I think we want to keep that going. We want to keep the innovation going. And we need to encourage women as well as men.
Right.
So I was just going to say, I mean, the fact of the matter is that the population of males and females is shrinking from enrollment in MIT's computer science.
Exactly right.
That are from the United States.
Yeah.
And that the balance of power is absolutely shifting to mm-hmm. China, to
India. Russia?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we want to stay ahead of that. We do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how do we do it?
Yeah. Hey, let's all go march on Washington. I got it. All right. Obama, we're coming.
So I want to ask a question.
Please, go ahead.
Regarding, you made a very interesting point, and I agree with you fully. We are, as a company, very enterprise-focused. And, you know, it's not rocket science to figure out that we make a lot of our money from you know, enterprise. It makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all of a sudden now we're becoming more of a consumer-focused company, right? Windows 7 is a consumer version.
We're trying to be.
We're trying to be. Mm-hmm. Why is it so hard for us to build something like the iPhone? I want to ask you that as the expert in this area. Why is that so complicated for us to get user experience at a fundamental level?
I don't think... well, first of all, I'm not the expert.
I know.
There's a lot of people that are experts at this, you know, and a lot of debate around the company, frankly. You know, with Apple, they're very vertically integrated. So they built the hardware, they built the software, they built the service, they built everything. They have control over the entire ecosystem. So in a way, it's much easier for them to do it. But that actually doesn't really answer your question, because is it entirely possible for us to do this
mm-hmm.
without control over that kind of vertical, you know, down to the hardware? I would say that we are getting better. There are people in Robbie Bach's group in entertainment and division that are very, very focused on making the user experience kind of the top, you know, the top important thing that you focus on when you build the product. If you look at the Xbox, you know, it's great technology, actually, just really great technology, but the user experience, it's really what actually mm-hmm. sold the Xbox.
Agreed.
Yeah, so we can do it. We are learning as a company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Julie's work on Windows 7, you mm-hmm. know, it's another example where if we really focus, this company can do anything.
Agreed.
Really, we can do anything. And we really focus on it, we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just takes actually a lot of leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, Jay Allen is mm-hmm. now the chief experience officer for Robbie.
Right.
And so, you know, he's driving the agenda. There are many people around the company, I've just named a few of them,
mm-hmm.
that are really starting to understand and drive it. And you know what? I will just say, we're really not that blind. I know we like to beat ourselves up. You know, we're a very self-critical company. That's one of the things I love about this company. We're very self-critical, mm-hmm. but we also, you know, back in the very, very early days, we actually were very focused on the user,
mm-hmm.
on the end user. It was just a slightly different end user. So we can actually become that focus again on the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little difficult in the Windows world because you don't have complete control over everything, but... You know, if you built something cool, the OEMs will work with you. You know, they mm-hmm. want that. I mean, nobody actually wants to ship a crappy product.
Right.
They just don't. Nobody selects to do that.
Sure.
They will follow. I think we just have to show a lot of leadership
mm-hmm.
and be really focused
right.
on it. And I think we have to have, you know, enough. We will attract other design talent
yeah.
as we get better at it.
Right. And we're in a group that thinks a lot about the workflow between developers and designers. We do the Mix conference.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that for Microsoft to really grow and evolve and stay, you know, relevant, it's not just an engineering company.
No. I think one of the things we always did in the past was, I think there was a lot of, you know, so one of the things I will say, and I hope I'm not offending anybody, is we hire a really smart computer scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Really smart. Like just you know, rocket scientists, right? Mm-hmm. They want to solve really complicated computer science problems. That's what they do.
Right.
So that's how we kind of, that's our DNA.
Right.
That's how we think about the world, right? We want to solve very complicated computer science problems.
That's right.
And, you know, now I think we still do, but we want to put a layer on top of that, which is the, what is the very complicated user experience problem that you also have to go solve, right? Because there, it's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would be building great user experiences. These are actually very complicated problems.
That's right.
You know, the user interaction model is very complicated, mm-hmm. and it's very hard to get right. It's very hard to get right. Let me just put in a plug here. For the phone, because it's such a small form factor.
Yeah.
It, you actually don't have a lot of room for error. You kind of have to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
You can't expose every single feature you possibly could on the bigger display. You know, you have to think about the world. You have to think about that problem in a much different way.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just challenging problems, and I think as we get people, you know, the computer scientists will still be solving their very complicated computer science problems because we still need to do all of that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, you know, okay, we actually should just recognize that there's this other really challenging set of problems that we also need to go solve.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have an easy answer. You know, all I know is on my team, it starts with the design. You know, all specs start with the design.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
There's a designer who works on the feature set.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts there. And then we look at, oh, how do we solve the problem, mm-hmm. right? Where it's not a set of technologies looking for a problem to solve. It's really, you know, this is the scenario. This is how I design it. This is how we should, this is what it should look like. Here's the user interaction. Here's the things that we need to allow the user to do easily. And then you look at the same time, you look at, okay, what's the technology? How do we actually do this? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we actually talk to the service, right? It's not just what's happening on the device. It's all about what's the magic behind mm-hmm. it. You know, how do you talk to the cloud? How do you talk to the service?
That's right.
And those are not things that the user sees, but we start with what the user sees. We start with the design. And it's very, you know, it's something that Jay's really trying to push, at least within E&D and also in a broader agenda, which is really say, okay, let's think about it from the experience perspective. Let's start with design. And I actually take that all the way to the kind of go-to-market, the brand, you know, how do you talk about it? And the other thing we're trying to do, I don't know how successful I will be, I'll tell you when I launch this product, what we're trying to do is having design, business, and the technology team kind of all work together, that we're not building a product and throwing it over the wall at some marketing group and saying, here, go take it to market.
Yeah.
That it's all integrated. You know, we design it for the user. We think about how, you know, who we want to target, how we want to sell this product, how we want to market it, how we want to reach these people. And then in between, we make sure that the product we built actually do all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying it. You know? And it's fun. I mean, everybody's very receptive to it, actually. The engineers are very receptive to it.
Good.
Good.
They love the good design. They love the good user experience as much as anybody else.
Because they're consumers, too.
They're consumers, too.
Everyone appreciates a good user experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you live in the Valley still.
I do. So
lucky you.
Well, you know, it's kind of nice. It was, I got to say, it was 75 degrees and sunny last weekend, both days. Yes, I do. I've been commuting. So I worked down in the Valley for Microsoft for about 11 years. In the last 6 years, I've been coming up here every week. So I commute up here every week.
Mm-hmm.
The last 2 years, I'm up here, you know, 90% of the time of my workday. So, but I go home for the weekend.
Cool.
That's just where your family is and you don't want to move to dark,
it's kind
gray
of a
Seattle.
Long story. my immediate family is there. You know, I'm not married and I don't have kids, but so I don't have the kids thing.
Mm-hmm.
My family's there. I grew up in the Bay Area. I went to school in the Bay Area. So I have a very deep roots there. Mm-hmm. It's my community. Mm-hmm. My support network's down there. I like working up here a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, if I didn't, I would just live and work in the Valley. Mm-hmm. But I really like working up here. I still love the energy around the company. And so I do this commute thing. But it's not really because I don't think this is a beautiful area. I do. I don't mind the rain so much, but I love the summer. Summers are awesome.
In Seattle.
Up here. Just yeah, awesome. Like, awesomely gorgeous. So I really love the area here. But you know, I have a lot of roots in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And really, I kind of like, I've been an outsider for mm-hmm. so long, all my life, that I kind of like a little bit of bringing the outside perspective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think of people who live here and work here, we tend to become very insular.
Totally.
And very just Redmond-centric. So I think I bring a little bit of the Valley. Although that's another very insular culture. I sure. understand that neither one of those is actually
right.
reality.
But you're bridging both of them.
Yeah, right. That's so great. I'm bridging two unreal worlds. You know?
Good.
So you said earlier, you said you never imagined being a corporate vice president at Microsoft. Why not?
That was never... I never thought about it. You know, I always wanted to just build products. I love products. I love working with smart people, and I love building products. What I really care about is building products that have an impact on the world. So, okay, I'm a little egotistical. You know, I want to work on products that everybody uses.
So, but what were you telling your bosses over the years when you would have your reviews, and they would say, Roz, where do you want to go? What do you want to do next?
I would be like, I would be very product specific. But I've been saying, the funny thing is, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. You know how you fill out your mid-year career
yes.
discussion or whatever, and there's a section that's pretty much free form. You can say whatever you want. And I looked back, and I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. I said, I really want to go do a V1 consumer product.
Mm.
And so that's kind of
what
I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I never really thought about my career. Like, I never wanted to manage a large team. In mm-hmm. fact, I never wanted to manage.
Mm-hmm.
When they first made me a lead program manager, I think my boss then told me on Friday, and I said, can I think about it over the weekend? Because I really, like, I'm not sure I want to do this. And he said, okay. So I came back on Monday, and I thought about it over the weekend. I came back on Monday and said, I don't want to do it.
Uh-huh.
And he said, why don't you just try it for a while?
Of course.
So I actually, like, hated it. I had an awful time. The first 6 months, I think everybody will, like, resonate with this. First 6 months as a lead at Microsoft was just dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
It was just awful.
Going from IT to manager, that's
oh,
a hard
yeah.
transition, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was a tough transition. I really hated it, but I stuck it out because I'm not a quitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of, like, eventually made peace with it. And, you know, I don't know. You know, it's kind of, I always wanted to do more. I wanted to be challenged, right? I never wanted to just know my job.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to do things that, where I was learning. You know, I like being in constant learning mode. I like doing tough things. I like being challenged. And so I always kind of took on more.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I'm a little bit of a control freak, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to fix problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always like, oh, that problem, there's a problem. I need to go fix it. Fix, fix, fix. So
mm-hmm.
I would start fixing problems around me. And I think, in a way, that's how you get promoted. You know, that's what happens to your career. You're always trying to fix other problems and always want to be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the general manager job was actually a pretty big stretch. I felt like that was a really big stretch because I went from managing 60 people where you still really can have these one-on-one
yep.
interactions with everybody to managing about 200 people
wow.
very quickly.
Yeah.
And it was suddenly, you know, the word leadership actually had meaning
yes.
for me. You know, it wasn't management. I always distinguish between management and leadership.
Absolutely.
And I had to learn to be a leader. And I'm kind of a slow learner, so it took me a little while to first figure out there was a difference and
mm-hmm.
second, figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I scaled from being, you know, managing like a 200-people team to now I have 500 people. And that happened almost overnight. I grew from 12 to 500 in about 9 months. Mm-hmm. So that's another scaling up. But, you know, it's been, you know, I mean, I can't really explain it except that I was always willing to go take on the unknown and take on the challenge and to really kind of be open to this rapid learning.
Is that because you're not afraid to fail or because?
I'm not afraid to fail. I am a risk taker by temperament. I think there's a little bit of that. I don't think you can play it safe and get to be a corporate VP, really, in this company. I think you have to have a little bit of a, you know, it's okay to fail. And actually, that's another thing that this company, I feel like this company is actually really good at, is letting you take that risk and fail. As long as you don't make the same mistake, you know, that then you can keep going.
Right.
And so I think you really do have to be willing to say, okay, you know, I don't know what I don't know, and I'm going to, you know, go out there. I mean, I took a huge risk. I was running, you know, a $300 million P&L and a 200-plus organization. And when I took this assignment, it was me. You know, I had me. My admin almost didn't come with me. She didn't decide if she wanted to take that risk or not. You know, so it was me. And then I hired a small team. And what could have happened was 6 or 7 months after we started, Robbie and Steve could have said, hey, no, you're not going to get funded. And I would have no job, and I would have to go look for another job. So it's a little bit of risk-taking, and then a little bit of being willing to go big, right? Because I could have defined the solution set to be smaller.
Right.
I didn't believe it. I thought, really, this was a big challenge, and the company needs to go do a big challenge. And I thought there was a huge opportunity here, and we should go get it.
Excellent.
Fortunately for me, the company agrees so far.
17 years, looking good.
Yeah, it's you know, but it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
You know, big things are worthwhile doing.
Yeah.
And being a woman didn't prevent you from getting to where you are. I mean, that's a...
You know, it's a tough question. Like, you can ask 10, you know, any of the women corp VPs around the company... And I would say we probably all looked slightly puzzled and said, you know, I don't know. Because I've never been a man.
Right.
You know, so I don't know if it would have been easier or tougher.
Right.
If I wasn't a woman.
Right.
I never, and I have said many times, you know, I just want to be a guy for a day. Like, just for a day, just to see what it feels like. But I've never been on the other side, so I don't know. I do know that you do. There is a little bit of a stigma. Like, you're normally, you're assumed, if you walk into any meeting, people kind of assume, oh, you must be in business or in marketing.
That's right. HR.
Yeah, HR or finance or something. So there is some, you know, quick first impressions that you have to get over, especially if you go talk to a partner or a customer. There's even a stronger assumption of that. So there is a little bit of that. So a lot of times you have to prove yourself. You have to kind of earn your credibility. But by and large, you know, Microsoft's a meritocracy.
Definitely.
So I don't know that's true. The thing that, so I say that, and I'll tell you from my personal experience, I don't think there's been a lot of that. But I will also say this. You look around statistically. What do you think? I think there is exactly, I don't know how many, there might be like 15 to 20 corporate VPs that are women. And out of the 20 or so, I think there might be 3 or 4 of us that are from inside of product groups. And so that tells you a little bit that statistically,
right.
But that's harder.
But isn't, I mean, mathematically, that would be a function of the total number of women versus the total number of men. So if you have... 80% of your employees are male. I'm not going on the record saying that because I don't know if that's the case.
Then I think you're probably right.
So then
I think
by
you're roughly correct.
You
I
have a larger pool of people to make VPs that also happen to be males of the species. So it might it might actually reflect more of the composition of humans as opposed to
You may be right. So if you look at all the Corp VPs that are male, you know, what percentage of those are in the product groups versus... So that's the way I would look at
Understood.
It. Right. Right. And so I would still say that if you looked at that ratio, mm-hmm. I would still say that the female corporate VPs are underrepresented in the product groups.
Yes.
I would still go with that statement.
Well, I mean, and Jennifer and I have found this after starting doing the show now for God knows how long we've been doing this, that there are essentially zero female technical architects. So in other words, a female who owns the architecture track of our product. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They don't exist.
Yeah, there are no TFs or DEs that are women.
That's right.
We also know that, too. We're keenly aware of that.
But that's an interesting... I mean, that could also be a product of reality, right? TFs and DEs are all very... They're like the uber geeks and uber people that have done tremendous things in the industry technically. So... I don't know. I'm just saying. They have to be here. We talk to great female engineers that write code every day. You know, why aren't they rising up to architects?
Well, there is a little bit of a gender difference, right, in communications. Like, I think that most females will tell you that we're less self-promoters than our male counterparts.
Jennifer's,
that is not a criticism.
Example. Yeah.
That is not a criticism.
Right.
That is reality.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right? Also, you know, I have taught many, many young women that have started in a company that in this company, you do not start expressing your opinion by saying, you know, it's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, I'm sorry, I don't agree with you. I always tell them, don't apologize.
That's right.
And of course it's your opinion. You're saying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So don't let them discount your opinion before you say it.
That's right.
And so there are, I mean, I literally think sometimes this can just be, you know, codified
mm-hmm.
and like taught
mm-hmm.
from day one,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, there is some assumption. And there's some communication differences. I think women are much less about winning an argument and much more about solving a problem
mm-hmm.
collaboratively.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that can also be viewed as a sign of weakness.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes.
You know, I've sat in many, many meetings, and I'm not going to name any names, with a bunch of male colleagues at all different times in my career, and watch them in a meeting have an argument that is totally, like, who cares?
Right, like, off topic. But at that point, it's about who's louder.
Can we just please move on?
Yeah.
You know, I don't really care. If you want to win an argument, you go win that argument. Let me just get some work done here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a little bit of, you know, just self-promotion. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
I just mean, like, getting credit for the work that you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of those that would tell me, especially when it comes to being a TE and a TF and a DE, I think there might be more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're just more expressive
mm-hmm.
about the work they've done and about their, you know, their perspective on different parts of the technology. You know, I will say this as well, which is I am actually the first Asian female corporate VP in Microsoft's history.
Wow.
Ever. I did not know that.
Hmm.
Actually, Tanya told me that when I got promoted.
Hmm.
I didn't know that.
I don't know Tanya. What's that?
Oh, she used to be the VP of Diversity. Tanya Clemens.
Okay.
I think she's retired, but
So
that was kind of a surprise, but not really surprising because in a way, you know, people who have Asian background tend to be also less, you know, outspoken.
That's right.
True. So it's a cultural.
Yeah, it's more cultural. That's why I said, you know, at the beginning,
yes.
It's really less about me being a woman. It's more about just cultural differences and communication styles. And, you know, I've had a lot of people tell me, you're kind of like a guy.
Speak your mind.
I've been told that.
And I say, yeah, I think that's true. Mm-hmm. And if you really think about it, it's not a compliment on your agenda.
But look at you breaking down barriers.
That's great.
The point here is first Asian, first, you know, a great female product group vice president on the engineering side. There's room here at Microsoft for everyone.
Of course there is. And I think one of the things that people get confused of when they think about a lifetime or a job in computer science is that you have to be a developer. Most of the people we employ do not write code for a living and spend very little time writing code, debugging code. So you can be very successful at this company by just being into design or being creative, being smart and creative. That's all you really need. So I think there's a stigma associated with you can't get a job at Microsoft unless you have a computer science degree. That's not true at all, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So why don't we market that message?
Yeah.
You know, well,
you know,
I don't know why we don't.
I think it's partially because Bill was...
Bill didn't even have a high school. I mean, he didn't have a college
but
degree.
But Bill as the personification of Microsoft.
Right, he's the uber nerd, right?
Yeah,
uber
he's
geek.
the uber geek. And
but
that's how people think about Microsoft. That's how they think about
Microsoft, though.
As
an engineering company.
Yeah. Here's what I will also tell you about my career, which could actually explain a little bit of why women don't go on to be the DE and the TF roles. Mm-hmm. So when I worked at HP, and actually throughout my career, there was always a lot of pressure for me to be the face to the customer. You know, be the engineering face to the customer, to the point where people would say, oh, you're really good with people. Maybe you shouldn't be a developer.
Mutually exclusive?
Yeah, and it's not mutually exclusive.
Not
so I think what happens is, because a lot of women are actually better, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say better, I'm not going to say that as a stereotype, but, you know, they're more open to being collaborative, that somehow they kind of get lured out of their developer, you know, very technical track.
Yeah.
And I have given women this advice too, which is, you know, don't do that unless you really want to.
Right.
Like, unless that's what you really, really want to do, just because you're pretty good at it doesn't actually mean you should walk away from the really technical track, because you're really good at that too.
Right.
You get to choose. And so that's another one where I think we fall into a little bit of those kind of paths because it's easy for us to get onto those paths. So that's another one. You know, I don't know how to solve the problem. I know that I kind of do my part by speaking, by, you know, contributing to organizations, by doing some work in my copious spare time.
On the plane.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing I will say, and I actually said that, there's an interview with me in this magazine just came out. But the other thing I said is, a lot of people have told me, no, you can't do something my whole life. Mm. And I never accept no for an answer. Mm. Sometimes that leads to good results. Sometimes that leads to bad results. I will say that you have to have a certain, as a woman, you have to have a certain amount of, no, actually, I think I can do this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just because somebody tells you, conventional wisdom isn't always right.
Right.
And just because a lot of people, experienced people, smart people, smart experienced people may tell you it can't be done, that doesn't actually mean you should listen to them.
Believe in yourself.
Believe in yourself. Circumstances change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You may bring different experiences and different
knowledge.
Right. The world changes. The environment changes. So just because really smart people tell you it can't be done, sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong.
Prove them wrong
for
the most part, though.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're not as smart as you'd think they, as they'd have you think they are.
Right.
There's
That's
a lot
right.
of posers out there, especially in this industry.
Yeah, but, you know, yes, there's a lot of posers, but I would even say really smart people can be wrong.
Absolutely.
I like it. So we're going to wrap up, but and I don't want to wrap up on a stereotype, but I'm going to anyway, because I know there's a story behind it. Why is your office so wonderfully pink?
Actually, I can't tell you.
Oh, okay. Then we'll end it on that note.
Perfect.
You know, it'll all be in the book.
Okay. Oh, you're smart.
All right. Well, thank you. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Awesome.
Thank you guys for coming all the way over here.
Of course.
We found it.
Yeah.
And good luck with your V1 product that we can't talk about.
We'll be back.
Yeah, come back though.
We will.
Because I'm going to write this book. I'm going to publish it. I want to get on Oprah.
You still have goals. I love it.
Excellent.
And in the meantime, we're going to go tell the president-elect that he needs to do something about getting more people
Let's
into
go.
Computer science.
Cheers.